winning sound of Network Sports.
And a very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guests, heard on Voice of Barbados. You can call us at 441790. You can send a WhatsApp to 253-4679 or an email to cricketmason@yahoo.com. Mason and Guests is brought in association with the very good friends at ASFE, where we run the best shot of the day. Well, we expect some shots from the West Indies team. 7:30 Eastern Caribbean time, 6:30 in Jamaica. The first test match, Adelaide, the West Indies, underdogs, no doubt to be looking to do well. And for all of you, you can see it on Sportsmax, you can see it on Flow Sports, you can also see it on Willow. So, Larry, you've made your notes. Sportsmax, Flow Sports, Willow, thanks to my very good friend Philip Spooner, who sent that information to me. West Indies up against Australia, 7:30 Eastern Caribbean time. And we are wishing, hoping like Dusty Springfield that the West Indies can somehow compete against the Australians. They say, feed your faith and doubt will starve to death. And if you itch for success, then keep on scratching. We have not won a test match there for some 26 years. That's a long, long time. And tonight on Mason Guest, we are going to be discussing that. Of course, there are other things we're going to be discussing as well. We note with interest the Barbados team has been selected in terms of regional cricket. Shamar Brooks is a reserve. That's interesting. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens in terms of the side. We're hoping to link with the chairman of selectors, Hendy Broom. He's consented to come on the show. We hope that he will come on the show a little bit later on. And we also want to talk to Lawrence George Roy Yagaro. Of course, the excitement in Florida, T20. He's got his own program there celebrating his brilliant triple century back in 1974. I can also tell you that on the show last week, Chris Derrin was on our show. I'm reporting tonight that Borough County in Florida has secured the services of this honorable gentleman. So Chris Derrin is very much a part of their organizing committee, and that is of interest, no doubt about it. He's had the experience of course, being part of the 2007 World Cup. And yes, you can't allow that kind of experience to go by the wayside. And in fact, he is the man who is in charge there. Now, last week on the show, we had Johnny Grave. And he was making the point that Courtney Brown and Eldeen Baptiste were paid in full. And that certainly generated a great deal of discussion because the lawyers were saying that's not true at all. And I thought it was important for us to look at that again. And actually, I did some searching and I've actually found the lawyer who is representing Courtney Brown and Eldeen Baptiste, Loy West, who, by the way, did his studies in Barbados and, from all reports, bowled a pretty good left arm spin when he played for the University of the West Indies. And what we're going to do, we're going to keep him very long. I know he's a very busy man making a lot of money in Antigua and Barbuda. He's kindly consented to join us on the show. And let me say hello to you, Loy. How are you, my friend?
Good evening, Andrew. I'm well, thanks. Good evening to your listeners and to the rest of the members on the panel. It's wonderful to be here. I'm well, thank you.
Wonderful. All right. Now, Give us a background to this, though, because I think it is important. This is going on since 2019. My recollection is that there was a statement in a press conference made by the then president of Cricket West Indies, you know, I mean, and that kind of a comment really, if my memory serves me right, really did not go down very well. It meant that Courtney Brown and Eldine Baptiste actually went and sought some assistance in terms of legal assistance. Give us a background to this and let us know exactly where we are now.
Okay, thank you so much. So just to give a very brief synopsis of what caused us to be where we are now, just around in April of 2019, Courtney Brown, who was the then chairman of selectors, and Eldine Baptiste, who also was a selector, they received a letter in April, and that letter indicated that their services would no longer be required by Cricket West Indies. Now, the letter basically terminated their services and didn't really state the reason as at that time. But subsequently, and I believe if memory serves correctly, it was the following day, the then president of Cricket West Indies made some statements that the selectors had been in the practice of victimizing the players of the West Indies team, and that there was going to be a new regime in place, and that he was happy to report that they had gotten rid, that Cricket West Indies had gotten rid of those selectors that were in the practice of victimizing the players in the West Indies team. As a consequence of that, Mr. Brown and Mr. Baptiste would have sought legal advice. And we wrote to Cricket West Indies, myself being led by Mr. Anthony Astafan, and we wrote to Cricket West Indies indicating that the circumstances of the dismissal were unfair, that Mr. Brown and Mr. Baptiste really were employees of Cricket West Indies and were not to be terminated in such a way. And they were entitled to certain protections under the Antigua and Barbuda Labor Code, and therefore entitled to certain compensation for an unfair dismissal. Letters were written back and forth. Eventually, we had to take the matter to the industrial court, and we filed a claim for unfair dismissal at the industrial court. And this matter, eventually, we reached a consent position and entered into a consent order between Courtney Brown and Cricket West Indies and Eldine Baptiste and Cricket West Indies. Now, that order would have been entered on the third day of May 2023. And I can just give you a very, very quick synopsis of what the order said. So the employer, that is Cricket West Indies, for Courtney Brown, they agreed to pay $71,000, representing 12 months salary, and thereafter they would also pay $81.25, and this is US, representing gratuity, $12.15, representing reimbursement for certain expenses, and a cost of $8,034. So there was a total sum which was agreed to be paid in two equal installments of $88,374. Now, in relation to Eldine Baptiste, the order was entered on the same day, and by consent, there was an agreement that Mr. Baptiste would be paid $51,600, representing 12 months salary, $6,000, representing gratuity, and $5,760 in cost. And again, these payments were to be made by way of two installments. The reality is, I did hear the clip of Mr. Graves indicating that the selectors had been fully paid. And he referenced a payment, I believe, in 2019. Mm. Now, the terms of the which were entered in 2023 are forward.
Oh.
And not going back. So there's no any back pay or any reimbursement that they would have allegedly received, which would be applied It was a total sum in both cases, which were to be paid by two equal installments. Cricket West Indies have made two installments, but the installments are not what was required to have been paid. There were two installments, one made on June 14th, 2023, mm-hmm. and the other on July 10th, 2023. The final position is that Cricket West Indies in total still has a balance of $40,494.82 cumulatively. Ooh. For Courtney Brown and Eldin Baptiste. And so we have written several letters to counsel for Cricket West Indies. We have also written to Cricket West Indies, Mr. Graves himself, for Cricket West Indies, between May and now, trying to obtain some form of conclusion, because we have an agreement, it's a consent position, it's an order of the court, and failure to comply with the order really is contempt of the court order. Unfortunately, while we have received two tranches of payment, they are not in accordance with the order of the court. And so there is that balance that is still due and owing. After having written these several letters and without having received the final outstanding sums, unfortunately, we have been forced to take the matter back to court. Mm. And so we've filed court, we've commenced enforcement proceedings, and we have sought the certification of the registrar from the industrial court to certify that there is an amount outstanding still. Mm. We've provided the evidence of the payments to show that this amount really is outstanding. And once we receive that registrar certificate, then we will be proceeding with our enforcement. It is our hope that we don't have to proceed with enforcement right to the point where we're getting to committal applications and bringing directors and officers of Cricket West Indies before the court with a threat of imprisonment for failure to comply with a court order. Ooh. We don't want to have to go down that road. Unfortunately, as we stand now, all our olive branch efforts have not been successful. And so we now have to petition the court again to obtain the outstanding sums for Mr. Brown and Mr. Baptiste.
Mm, stunning revelation here. Philo, as a budding lawyer, you want to react to any of this? I think it was important to have Mr. Loy West on the show this evening, because we need to make sure that we, you know, truth is not always popular, but truth is always right. Philo, any reaction to all of this? 40,000 and change, US.
Good evening, Andrew. Good evening, Dr. Ford, Anthony Gray, Council West, Sheila Hart, Boogie, my good friend. And I got that last to speak to you, Andrew. Product. They want to sell you some car product to make your Jeep look good. Andrew, this is stunning. And I am happy. I'm happy with the capital S. I'm happy that Mr. West has come on this program, because last week we were told without any doubt they were paid in full.
Mm.
As a full with a common S, because they're outstanding funds due. It's an order by the court.
Mm.
And it baffles me why counsel for the West Indies and even West Indies have not acted in good faith to finish this matter.
Mm.
And I'm happy that you can get counsel to come and explain to us what is the true story, because there are a lot of dark holes in West Indies cricket. And I'm happy that you can join us and explain, Mr. West. And this is a serious breach. There's a breach of law. There's a breach of fiduciary. And this is blatant disrespect for two former employees, two guys who have worked hard for West Indies as peers and then as selectors. And now they've come to the end of their tenure and they're not being.
Mm. Philo, what's wrong with you? Are you in Barbados,
you
Philo?
Your legal team?
Mm. Because we don't hear you well. You're breaking up slightly. Where are you? Are you in Barbados or are you in England? Or you don't want to tell us?
I'm in Barbados.
Okay.
The next time you see me, I'm in England. But I'm happy that Mr. West and his legal team can try to nail this.
Mm.
after this situation. This is not a good situation for Cricket West Indies and for former employees of Cricket West Indies. So this is something that can put Cricket West Indies in, to terminate people's contracts or not renew their contracts. They need to do it the right way. Certainly in Courtney Brown and Eldin Baptiste's issue, they did not do it the right way and they're facing the courts. And I will hope your good officer will see this through and make these two men are justly rewarded. And Cricket West Indies will get to pull up their socks.
Mm. Now, before we go to the break, Doc, Ford, any reaction? Any questions? Any reaction to all of this?
Well, I do have a question as to whether the original payment that was made in 2019, is this equal to the sum that deficit that you're speaking of that is owed to your clients right now?
Well, the reality is I am not aware of what payment it is that Mr. Graves is referring to, the 2019 payment. I have no knowledge of the payment, but the terms of the order were. You see, we arrived at a consent order taking into account everything that took place. You would realize that the consent order also refers to expenses that remained unpaid. Mm. And so the order would have looked at the entire tenure of the employment and what was outstanding to the employee and the amount in compensation that ought to have been paid because of what we determined was an unfair dismissal. So I'm not sure what the 2019 refers to, but it definitely has no place in the discussion of the amounts that are due to be paid to Mr. Brown and Mr. Baptiste.
Well, the confidence with which Mr. Grave spoke last week would suggest that, you know, to the layman, that mathematically, Cricket West Indies would believe that when you add all the totals up, that they come up to for the ruling. So I guess it really comes down to, the precedence. I'm no lawyer, but is there precedent for that being included? Or does the order that you have make the original payment tend towards zero and separate? And I guess that's something that will be determined in the future. But from what you're saying, is it that this is not a case for, there's no room for mediation or arbitration at this stage? It's just a plain, simple legal matter?
Well, it's a legal matter. It is a matter that is before the court. There's an order and there must be compliance with that order. But having said that, we have written several letters to Cricket West Indies and to council with a view to bringing this matter to some form of resolution. And the door is always open for a conversation to be had to conclude the matter. The sums outstanding are sums that are due from a legal perspective. There's a legal right for those sums to be paid, and that should be done. But that doesn't mean that there will be no discussion or that there can be no discussion between the parties to resolve this issue quickly. If Cricket West Indies gives us a call tomorrow and says, listen, we want to make the payment in two tranches, you know, we can negotiate how these will be paid. Right now, they are in contempt of the court order. But if they are willing to make the payment in two tranches and ask us to withhold the enforcement procedure while they make those payments, I mean, these are things that can be discussed. But we are resolute that the amounts that are due are amounts that ought to be paid, and we are pursuing those payments based on the order that we have.
Okay, but without letting the cat out of the bag, based on what's happening, is there precedence for this same situation? I assume that this has happened before somewhere in the legal world.
There is no precedent for someone, for an order that you have to pay a certain sum of money and then saying, oh, well, I paid them something before, so that must apply. That's not how court orders work.
Mm. Yeah, but suppose it's exactly 40,000 and change, as you mentioned. Suppose it's the exact mathematical number.
It makes no difference. It makes absolutely no difference.
Okay.
All right. There's an order that a certain amount is going to be paid from May 23rd, 2023, and is going to be paid in two tranches. That sum that has to be paid has to be that amount after May 23rd, 2023.
And you want to confirm the amount on again, counsel?
The total amount outstanding and due to be paid to Courtney Brown and Eldine Baptiste is $40,494.82
US. Oh dear. Do you consider this, before you go, Loy West, that this to be a most unfortunate situation and really should have been settled a long time ago?
Yeah, I think so. I think that we didn't need to get to the point where we're at enforcement. As I said, a number of letters of correspondence would have been written seeking a response. Once we noted that the timeline for making the payment had passed, our immediate response wasn't to petition the court for enforcement. We reached out, we wrote letters, and if discussions had been had, if responses had been received within the last 6 months or so, then certainly we wouldn't be here. But what we've been met with is stonewall silence. And then I am presented with the statement that they were paid in full, which is an inaccurate statement. I don't know if Mr. Graves was operating under some misunderstanding, but whatever his thought process was, our position is that these monies ought to be paid. And if they had responded, Cricket West Indies had responded to indicate that, then perhaps this would have been clarified earlier without the need to come on air and air all of these outstanding issues. But the reality is that 40,000 plus US is owed to these employees and we need to have it paid.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you. Doc, any further thing before Mr. West goes? Any final comment or you're good?
Well, I think it sounds like the courts will have to decide who's right on that one. So I eagerly await the result. You know, is it just mathematics or is it procedural and time related? So for a non lawyer, unlike our two great friends on the panel, I just want to see the logic of it because I love logic.
They say logic is the science of reasoning. All right. Well, Loy West, I want to thank you very much indeed for coming on the show. I thought it was very, very important to bring you on. I didn't go for anyone that is not. You are the lawyer for Courtney Brown and for Eldine Baptiste. I phoned you and I thought it was important for you to come and tell the world exactly what the situation is. Thanks and have a very good evening, my friend.
Thank you for having me, and thank you once again.
All right.
Take care.
There you go. We're going to pause for business calls. When we come back, of course, we're going to be looking at the test match. Mind you, it starts at 7:30 Eastern Caribbean time. I know Tony Gray is very much with us. He's going to give a reaction, of course, to the West Indies side that was selected, and there's so many other things. Can the West Indies do well against the Australians? In fact, I saw the betting. It was some 94% to Australia, and the West Indies, I think, were at about 2%. Oh my golly, that does not inspire confidence. Missing a guest brought to the association with the very good friends at ASFE White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASFE White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, my good friend Tony Gray is with us. Tony, do you owe anyone any money? Tony. Where is no, Tony Gray?
I'm not sure that you never bought me a drink or anything like that. Oh, you don't owe anybody any money.
All right. Well, let's hope that matters. Let's hope that matters. So, now talk to me, Tony Gray. The West Indies side, first of all, do you like the side, Tony? The action starts at 7:30 Eastern Caribbean time.
Well, good evening to everybody. Good evening to you, Andrew. Good evening to our learned panel and Dr. Ford and my good friend, Philip Wallace, who I just saw in Trinidad.
Oh, really?
He bought me some lunch. Thank you, Philo. listen, it's first of all, it's very difficult to pick this side because we're playing at Adelaide, and that pitch is a very good cricket pitch. So it's not like it holds the advantage for a fast bowler or batsman or spin bowler. Anybody who has the focus and the concentration and have the skill can do well on that surface. It's one of the best pitches in Australia. So it's a good cricket pitch. So it makes it very difficult to pick this fine at 11. I agree with everything except for Kurt McKenzie. He's slated to bat at the number three position, and he's been grossly out of form. Now, we have Tej Narayan Chandrapal, Kurt McKenzie, Alec Antunes, all have been out of form. So I would not have picked Kurt McKenzie. I think that when you look at Kevin Sinclair, he has been a man that has been in tremendous form in all departments of the game. We know of his brilliance on the field. He's been getting wickets. He got some wickets in the practice game before this match that starts today. And he has been batting well. I think that he brings a certain aura to the team that I like, the positivity, and he's not going to be intimidated by big names that the Australians have. I mean, when you look at Antunes, as I said before, he's a class player. He's got to be looking to use the pace of the ball a little bit more rather than go hard at the ball because he has that ability to time the ball. But really pleased with Calvin Hodge and the way he's going about getting runs and being consistent. So he's going to be slated at the number five position. Justin Greaves, who I think should be batting at number three because recently, although it's white ball cricket, he has faced the faster bowlers and should be in that number three position. And it's a good thing that Joshua De Silva has gotten a century. Gurdakesh Muti, obviously, he's been a main spinner. And I just like the fact that if he was partnered with Kevin Sinclair, we know that the Australians are not as adept at playing, all break bowling. You've seen that historically. I mean, when you look at Lyons, he has been elevated in pass at this level because he has gotten a lot of wickets in the domestic cricket. Kemar Roach has to step it up as the main bowler because he's not done well in Australia at all. And it's great to see a Vary Joseph given the vice captaincy because I think that he has the balance that you need where personalities are concerned with Craig Braffitt. And I think that Shamar Joseph, I'm looking forward to seeing him. A partner with a Vary Joseph with the new ball, I think they should get the new ball and really and truly get some early wickets. But as I said before, Tej Narayan Chandrapal, I think that he's overcompensating with his technique, the back foot technique. It's too far in the crease, and that's why he's not scoring runs. And he's moving a little too early. But hopefully he can negate the Australian fast bowlers and put some runs on the ball. But this is a good side, except for Kurt McKenzie batting at that number three position. I think that Justin Greaves, who has had experience opening the innings before, should be in that position. And I think that Kevin Sinclair should have been picked for this first game.
Oh, you would have picked Kevin Sinclair, the off spinner. Interesting. Philo, your reaction to the test team selected?
Andrew, I share Tony's sentiments. We didn't discuss this personally off here. I was looking at the off spinner to play. I'm partner Moti. I know he's orthodox, but it's not really bowling savvy. He's more of a batting savvy. I thought that they would have looked to play the off-spinner. As Tony said, Australia don't play good off-spin bowling well. And Sinclair, has won went to South Africa, the A team, and he was successful. And I think that sometimes we just need to look outside the box and try to be a bit more dynamic. I'm happy that Jackson Grace has been given the opportunity. And I thought that as an opening batter, mind you, White Ball Cricket, like Tony said, he could have batted at three. But he batted at six, and they decided to stick to that, not for six from that practice game. But all in all, it is what the selectors have decided on the ground there. And they believe that McKenzie, who I'm not impressed with, Andrew, is the man to bat at number three. And that number three position is a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I said many months ago that Roland Mitchell was also on this program before he was a selector, that we can play three opening batters and make them bat one, two, three. But that doesn't seem to be the case. Although McKenzie, I believe, is an opener, but he's just not fitting the bill. He's not as confident as he should be. He scored a double 100 in Antigua, but not as confident as he should be. I'm happy for Shemar Joseph, especially Andrew. Can really continue to make strides. The Australians are very impressed in the media. I do hope he continues. And I do hope that he shines if he gets a chance.
Mm.
Have to be the one who will really have to come up and support those two young men. Also, Azari Joseph as well, who is our vice captain, and continues to improve. I'm happy that Joshua still got some runs in that 3-day game because he would stay down the barrel. But to get 100 on tour against a decent Australian 11 will give him a lot of confidence going into the first test match and going into the test series as well. And I do hope that they can really go there and nail down their skills and execute well, take the chances. We saw Pakistan dropping a lot of easy chances and letting Australia off the hook. And I hope that West Indies can do well in taking catches when they field and when they bat. Be combative. Don't be timid against the Australian bowling attack. They're going to come hard, but they have to be able to weather the storm. And also, another note, Andrew, I'd like to congratulate Shemar Holder for making the Barbados squad. He was a reserve from the list that I got, but now he's in the squad going up to Jamaica for the first four-day games in the regional competition. So congratulations to him. He's a work in progress, and I want to wish him all the very best. I hope he gets an opportunity in Jamaica to bowl and do well. Because this is another young fast bowler, Andrew, along with Jaden Seal, that we need to look at. If we can get four or five fast bowlers coming through, I think our cricket is going to start to improve.
All right. No, Roland Holders, join us. Your reaction, Doc, to the 11, you happy with it? Would you have played Sinclair? These guys, Philo Wallace and Tony Gray, would have gone with the off-spinner. Your reaction, Doc?
Well, you know, with such a young team and so many debutants and so little experience, I think the change which Mr. Gray suggested, you're exchanging one of the few people with a few tests, and I know he's out of form, and I appreciate the logic that's brought to bear with the wanting Sinclair instead. But, you know, we're talking maybe less than 10 tests versus zero tests, and, you know, I guess we have to ventilate and see if our number three really has what it takes in spite of his lack of form. And in such a group that with so little experience, I don't think that we can say that making one strategic move is going to strengthen the team to such an extent that it can alter the final outcome of the match. I believe that every uncapped player will eventually get their chance since they're now within this group, you know, in the fullness of time. But I guess we still have to determine if the incumbent number three has what it takes. Because if we just play a youngster for a few tests and then drop him suddenly, it doesn't really allow any confidence or any stability. And people must feel comfortable about their place to some extent until they've decided they can't function. So I'm not really that worried about keeping the side that is there. And I believe, you know, there's still another test match and other matches to come later, and we'll see what the others have in store. But certainly it will require a Herculean task by the 11. They'll have to play cricket at a high level for very long periods. And we see Pakistan did well in spurts and for sessions, but you know, test cricket is such an examination. It requires that you play well every single day to alter the outcome. So it's more about how the 11 functions together that I'm interested in, and see what our, you know, what the individuals that we have as some of our second string in the younger group, what they have to offer. This will be fascinating because we know we have to get to a new generation of cricketer. We know we must go there. So this is our chance to see what we have in the cupboard.
Right. Okay. Now, Roland Hall has joined us. Roland, good evening to you. And it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. No doubt, as a former West Indies cricketer, you're wishing for the best for the West Indies, Roland.
Hi, good evening, Andrew. Good evening, listeners. Yes, most certainly. The first test starts tonight, our time, and always wishing the West Indies the best.
Mm-hmm, indeed. And everybody fit as well? No concerns? I know you're in the Caribbean, but any concerns at all?
Not that I'm aware of, Andrew. The team management and the physios up there would sort that out if needs be. They haven't indicated they have any concerns.
Right. Okay. Now that you're on the line, the regional tournament starts, is it in February? Is that right?
Yes, it does, Andrew. You sure you want to ask me about the regional tournament? Because I know the narrative you've been spinning is that I've left CWI. So this is a CWI tournament. You sure you want to ask me about that?
Well, it was just a matter of time, really. Is it not September that you're leaving?
Well, I don't know, Andrew. Every 3 years I have a contract expiry, and it finishes every 3 years.
Okay.
My contract is up in September.
Okay, right. Fair enough. So they will talk to you. They'll do a review and talk to you then, basically. Have they done that or not as yet?
Which is the norm. They always do reviews every year, twice a year.
So there's a possibility that you will be with CWA after September then?
There's a possibility I will be. There's also a possibility I won't be.
Okay, fair enough. Well, tell your good
it's
friend.
It's a contract.
Tell your friend, Phil Wallace. Now, so the tournament is in February, and I'm hearing that the first three rounds will be in Jamaica. Can you confirm that?
So, Andrew, there are two islands being used for the first three rounds. Well, for most of the tournament, we have the unique challenge where a lot of the World Cup venues and some of the non-World Cup venues are doing renovations. So we were restricted in what venues we could use. And so the first three rounds, you have four teams in Jamaica and you have four teams in St. Kitts. The four teams in Jamaica, of course, would be the Jamaica Scorpions, the Windward Volcanoes, the combined campuses and colleges, and the Barbados Pride, mm-hmm. which leaves the other four teams in St. Kitts, which would be the Leeward Island Hurricanes, the Guyana Harpy Eagles, the Trinidad and Tobago Red Force, and, of course, the West Indies Academy. However, the third match, one of the two matches in round three that is slated for St. Kitts, that would be moved. That is being played at CCG in Antigua. So two of those teams will go over to Antigua to finish that third round game.
I see. So Jamaica, St. Kitts, and the last game in Antigua. All right, interesting. And when does it start exactly? Date?
The first game bowls off on the first set of matches bowl off on February 7th.
February 7th. All right. And interesting.
Yes.
Wonderful. February 7th. And it's Jamaica, Windward, CCC, and Barbados. And are these games going to be played at Sabina Park?
Yes. So we have three matches at Sabina Park. Mm. And the other matches are shared between Kensington and Chedwin Park.
Kensington and Chedwin Park. And you're comfortable with the facilities at Kensington and Chedwin Park?
Yes, WEPA and CWI did venue inspections, so they are pretty happy with the conditions of both those facilities.
Mm, I see. And Barbados is saying that they cannot play games in Barbados. We haven't had cricket there for a long time because the venues that they would normally use would be Windward, Police, and CCC. They are going to be practice venues for the ICC World Cup. Is that correct?
They are also doing renovations to some of their to those facilities, which then makes them impossible for us to play on presently.
I see. And in St. Kitts, most of the games will be at Warner Park? All the games at Warner Park?
Three matches at Warner Park and two at Connery.
Well, Barbados could play games at North Stars. Barbados could play games at the Foursquare Oval, I think. I don't know if the BCA would have given consideration to that. I mean, if you're going to be playing games at Kensington in Jamaica and at Connery, I think the venues in Barbados are good. And we've had cricket at North Stars before, so we can fix it up. So I'm not sure that I buy this thing from Barbados that because that they are having, you know, these venues like Police and CCC and Windward as World Cup venues that they couldn't, you know, have an opportunity to play the matches elsewhere as in other countries are going to be. I mean, the games at Kensington, their games at, I think you said, Connery as well. So I'd like Barbados to explain to me why they didn't look at having games. Barbados needs to have cricket in Barbados. We haven't had cricket at the first class level for a long time. So I'm a little bit disappointed, I must admit. Anyhow, let me go to Philo Wallace and, of course, Dr. Ford and Anthony Gray. And anything for our good friend Roland Holder, who is going to have his contract extended after September?
Hi, Roland. Happy New Year. Roland, obviously, with the cricket facilities as the T20 World Cup, I don't know if it's in any of the games where we use pink ball, because we played a pink ball test match in Australia, a second test. Are there, down the road, is there any future thinking of getting into the place on white ball, some pink ball for the games?
So, Philo, I'm not getting you clearly. You're cutting in and out.
Are there any plans for four-day cricket to play with the pink ball going forward?
Not presently during this season, but
right.
We have played quite a few first-class matches using the pink ball. So there's nothing stopping us from going back there. So, yes.
Another thing, the movement of players, obviously, you're going to Jamaica with some of the guys, the teams, the squad, and then to St. Kitts. The movement of teams, is that going to be obviously all seamless, no problems going moving forward when they're actually starting?
So the Cal flight, as you are, is a large aircraft, so that will take the three teams going into Jamaica quite comfortably. That aircraft also passes through St. Kitts. Sorry, passes through Antigua, and then we will move those teams from Antigua into St. Kitts. A similar thing we do for the Women's Regional, which is slated for March, where we move the teams to Antigua and then move them into St. Kitts from Antigua.
Mm. I see. Roland, when are we going to get the itinerary, full itinerary? I know you gave us dates and venues. When is there going to be a release?
I believe the release is being worked on as we speak, Andrew. We have spoken to the franchises and shared the schedule with them. So the release is in the pipeline.
I see. And Tony Gray, the Trinidadians are preparing for this? I mean, they're supposed to be playing in St. Kitts. Do you know? I know that you were once chairman of selectors and you lost your pick. But are you close to the Trinidad side, Tony?
Well, the thing about it is they had a North-South game recently. North won. You saw some good performances by batsmen especially, a couple of hundreds here and there. So they're preparing well. And obviously, they have had a camp before, one or two practice games before. So it looks good. They look like they are ready to play the regional four-day tournament.
What's happened to Darren Bravo? He didn't
play.
Well,
reports is that he's still, obviously, I've worked with him before as a youth cricketer, and I know his personality. He will be perhaps still despondent at not being selected in the 50-over tournament. And at that stage of his life, he needs added motivation. So he's not played in any of the practice games, and he's not played in the North South game. He was carded to be the captain of the North team, but he's not played in that game. So obviously, he's still despondent, and I'm not saying anything else, but he's still despondent.
Do you expect him to play?
Well, he's a type of player that needs to be prepared properly if he has to play. Perhaps not the first two games, but if he is motivated by somebody that has the influence, maybe he will play the remaining of the season. But it's going to be difficult for him to play the first couple of games because he likes to be prepared properly.
Mm.
And he's not prepared properly. He's not played cricket for a while.
Mm. Doc? Any questions for Roland Holder? The regional tournament starts very early in February. You must be excited about that.
Yeah, I am excited about it, among other things. But I wanted to just get back to Tony and ask him, are there any structures in place for players who are going through various issues that affect their ability to play and to perform, and are you guys able to support a player with these sort of things, with his best interests at getting back on the park, being paramount to everyone?
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful question, Doc, because in the past, I'm not just talking about Trinidad players, but in the past, we've seen players go through personal issues, who struggle with injuries, and have not given the full encouragement to come back comprehensively. So for example, when I was chairman of selectors for the Red Force team, I got in contact with a psychologist for Darren, because obviously having worked with these guys at the under 19 level, I understood the makeup, the mental makeup of him. And I asked him to call a number of psychologists that would have helped him, that wanted to reach out to him, because this is not just about cricket. It's about human beings, and we need to help them with their personal issues. Dorich, for example, I saw him bat in recent times in Trinidad with the CCC team. He handled them well, and it's not easy to handle a CCC team because you have young players from all over the Caribbean, and they're novelty items, not knowing them. And he batted so well. I was excited for him to return to the West Indies team, but again, I'm not sure what has happened to him, and we need to have additional help to help these players. But not real structure in Trinidad to support things like personal issues. I think that players have to do it on their own.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I know, Roland, this isn't your purview, but I'm sure Cricket West Indies has a lot of psychologists and support staff. Do you think that we have enough of a structure in place to help, you know, the few hundred players that play in the regional tournaments?
Hi, Doc, up and on, and best wishes to 2024. Yeah, there are persons available who are made available to assist persons who require assistance. Of course, you have to want the assistance as well. So that is there. That system is in place. As to if it is enough, is it ever enough? Ideally, you would probably want one per player. But in reality, those persons are available and they can be contacted.
When you see teams and support staff, there isn't a mention of team psychologists. So I guess you won't travel with them, even though they may be available. But you do hear a lot more about it in the bigger cricketing countries. So So maybe it's something we should look at going forward. Yeah. But from what we talked about earlier with the World Cup coming on, is the regional tournament going to be affected a lot by all the grounds that are going to be used for the upcoming World Cup? Have you had to do a lot of juggling and rearranging from your original plans before you would have known about the, you know, the timetable for the World Cup?
Well, I also have some responsibility for the World Cup in the venues, etc. So more than several months ago, we had an idea what was happening, what was going to be done. It's just for those venues to get the work started. A lot of the work has come on stream now. So we did have to do several rejigs of the actual schedule, as we had to do with the World Cup schedule. But the challenge as well is because it is work being done, you may also not complete the work that on time. So you also have to factor in that. And so we're also looking at contingencies in case venues are not completed in time, where we have a plan B to go to other venues.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
Interesting. So Roland, just before you go, I've got my pen and paper. Just to write this down. So the first round of matches, let's start with Jamaica. The first game is who against who? Roland, can you tell me the game in Jamaica?
Andrew, I'll keep you in suspense and wait and let you get the press release.
Okay, so but it starts in February.
Starts on February 7th. The first round of matches starts on February 7th. The second round on February 14th. And the third round on February 21.
Right. And of course, we're talking Jamaica and we're talking St. Kitts. And you also said a game is going to be played in Antigua, just to make sure that everything is fine. Everything is good.
At CCG.
Okay, fair enough. All right. Well, any other thing for Roland before he goes? I know he's a very busy man. But by the way, Roland, you said you're working with the World Cup. What exactly are you going to be doing? Roland?
I'm the head of cricket for the World Cup.
You're head of cricket for the World Cup. That's a big job, Roland.
Not really, Andrew. It's just a title.
It's a title. Okay. So what? When you say head of cricket, could you just explain what you're going to be doing?
I'm overseeing my team and I are overseeing the cricket component of the tournament in the West Indies.
I see. All right, your team, is that a big team you got, Roland?
I have persons in each island that is hosting the World Cup, and there are a couple of people in Antigua who will be assisting as well.
And so far, things have gone pretty well.
Yes, things are going pretty well so far. The pitches and outfields are getting their work done on them. So all that is part of my remit, and that is ongoing as we speak. I don't want us to confuse the work on the physical plant. I'm more responsible for the pitch and the outfield and that type of thing.
The pitch and the outfield. Well, let's hope we get good pitches rolling.
Yes.
I think Anthony Gray's got a...
That's what the aim is.
Yeah, I think Anthony Gray's got a question for you. Anthony?
Tony. Yeah, good evening, Roland. How are you?
Hi, Tony. How are you? I'm good. Best wishes for 24.
Same here. Just one thing. The last time in 2007, I don't think that the cultural or the essence of our cultural heritage and the diverse cultural strength that we had in different ways in Trinidad, Barbados, Guyana was really projected, because there were some stern laws concerning what you carry to the grounds and that sort of thing. Is it going to be relaxed now so that the world could see what we have to offer where our culture is concerned.
Tony, if we think back to all the World Cups we have held post-2007, so we held the Men's T20 World Cup in 2010, we've held the Women's World Cup in 2018, and more recently the Under-19 Men's World Cup in 2022, and there was a vast cultural component attached to that. So my answer to you would be that the first ever tournament that we hosted in 2007, there were some challenges, etc. I think the organizations involved have learned from it and have moved beyond that.
All right. Well, Roland, just before you go, Australia, they've won the toss and will field. That's the last thing somebody just sent me that. No, Australia, they won the toss and they're fielding. Let's wish the West Indies well. Can we beat Australia, Roland?
I think we can beat every team. It's how you play, how well you do it. So if I think Doc mentioned it earlier, if we are able to put together consistent performances, then we stand a pretty good chance of winning matches. But if you go into a game thinking that you're not going to win it, then you are already well behind the game. So I am of the firm view that certainly that team up there is of the view that they can win the games. And it only takes one person to hold up their hand and have a fantastic performance and with the support of the others. So I'm not going to say we can't do it. I'm pretty sure we can do it. But how we play the game is crucial.
It is. Well, Roland, I want to thank you very much indeed for coming through and talking to us. Always a pleasure to talk to you. And we wish you well as you go forward in life, Roland Holder. All right, I think he's left us. All right, can we take a commercial break? When we do that, we'll come back. And of course, I note with interest that Ken is in red again. That's got political implication. You always wear red on Tuesday, Ken. Where is that?
All the people, let me give you it straight. All the people that wear red are good, powerful people.
Oh,
Techna.
All right. I think Anthony Gray is wearing such a little bit of red, really.
A semblance of red.
Yeah, a semblance of red. All right, good. And we all know that he's a Kamla Prasad person. All right. When we come back, we're going to open the lines 441790. We also want to look at that Barbados team. I want to get some reaction from you, Philo Wallace. I note with interest that our very good friend, Shamar Brooks, is a reserve. And that's interesting that Shamar Brooks is. And Shane Dorridge is in the Barbados team. Now, mind you, Hendy Broom had agreed to come on the show this evening, but I just got a note from him saying that there's going to be a press conference instead. So, Hendy, seems as if you can't talk outside of a press conference. That's fine. All right. So, we did, in fact, promote that you were coming, but you're, in fact, stating now. You just sent me a note that you won't be able to come. You're going to be attending the press conference. But we're going to discuss the Barbados team. There's no doubt about that. And we hope next time that you are in a position to join us on Mason and Guest. That's Boss for Business Course, Mason and Guest, brought in association with the very good friends at ASFE. We're on the best show of the day.
ASFE, bike run. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth. Break it down or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
It's 7:14 in the country, the lines are open. Mason and Guest, hello. Hello.
Good afternoon, good night, Andrew.
Oh, that's the point.
Yeah, why all the time that I can see Dr. Ford reach for his pen every time I come on to give me 10 out of 10.
Dr. Ford is reaching for his pen?
Over the phone.
Are you sure it's a pen? Are you sure it's a pen or a pencil? Talk to me.
But I'm going to give him a little piece of poetry with the West Indies theme.
Yes, sure.
Since I mentioned his pen, I'm going to say, that if West Indies do not go and get ball out against the pace, they're going to end up in the Lions' den.
They're going to be the Lions' den.
Yeah, so that rhyme with the pen, I think you would give me 10 for 10 out of that.
Not quite. I think it's very simple. I don't give you marks like the man who's in red, Ken Husbands. He tends to give you marks and lyrical interpretations.
I think you really know enough of my poetry to give him that. But we'll see how it goes, Andrew. But I don't know if those guys... do we have any Davies in the team that can David against Goliath?
No, it's going to be very difficult.
I can't remember how many body.
It's very difficult, and you know that we're batting first, so right, let's wish for the best.
I can't remember to have anybody in the team named Davies.
Right. All right,
but carry that thing short to kick to lick down Goliath.
Yeah, 4341790. Thanks, Poet, for coming and talking to us. We want to get some more reaction. You can give us a call. Do you think the West Indies will compete? First of all, let me go to you, Tony Gray. Australia winning the toss and fielding. Are you surprised?
Not really, because on the first day on that particular pitch on that venue, you will get something from the fast bowlers. As Philo Wallace said in the last program, the Australians have a psyche of, you know, wanting to batter teams. They don't care who it is. They're not going to be complacent at all. And the best time for the fast bowlers to bowl would be on the first day with some juice preparation moisture on the pitch. So I am not surprised with that. Although you would say that the Australians, they like to bat first, but they're not giving the advantage to the West Indians at all, who is more dependent on fast bowlers. And obviously, they have a new guy that called Sharmat Joseph, who can bowl really fast. So they're not going to try to give West Indies any advantage.
I see. Oh, let's take a call, 7:40, 70 minutes past 7 o'clock in the country. Hello, welcome.
Good night, Mr. Mason.
Good night to you, sir. How are you? Happy New Year.
I got a puzzle.
You're puzzled? Why are you puzzled, sir?
Well,
we were hoping to discuss this with the chairman of selectors tonight, Mr. Hendy Broom. So you would not have picked Durridge?
No, Durridge ain't played great for Barbie for how long? Because that he had a problem. The problem was solved.
Right.
He resign from cricket.
Right. Right.
We don't resign, it's not by reserve.
It is an interesting comment you're making. So what I'm going to do, let's go to Philo Wallace. Philo, would you have picked Shane Durridge in your Barbados team? And that's a question for Doc as well, who likes Shane Durridge a lot. Philo, would you have picked Shane Durridge?
No, I would not have picked Shane Durridge. No.
Mm.
No, I would not. I think when you look at Durridge, he just pulled off our West Indies international squad, and he said he's retired for international cricket. He's 32 years old. We have Rivaldo Clark, and there's another guy called Demetrius Richter, two young wicketkeepers. I think the selectors should have gone for even Rivaldo Clark, because he's the one that's been he's a standout keeper. He had a good eye, a good CPL. Why would you go to Durridge at 32 with no future West Indies cricket and keep two young wicketkeeper batters in the way? Mind you, they squad for the first three games. But I think that Durridge should not have been selected in the first place. And Andrew, I think that Shamar Brooks being a reserve is a slap in his face. Mm. It's an embarrassment for a man of Shamar Brooks' quality. And the Barbados selected should have fight some way to get Shamar Brooks into that 13-man squad. We don't have a middle order. Mm. Raymond Reefer going to bowl, or Raymond Reefer is going to play strictly as a batter.
Mm.
And I think that the selector panels in Barbados, I know the chairman have been, you know, going 16 years. But the thinking are the same. They're thinking the same way. They're not utilizing the players that they have effectively. So I think that they need to sit down and have more discussion around how they construct the squad. You cannot leave out Jamar Brooks. I don't care if he's not playing West Indies cricket. In a Barbados setup, he is class. He's quality and he's going to add to the team. And that is it. And we have to, because a man is 34, he should be able to make a contribution to Barbados cricket too. We're dumping men and saying, come young boys and play. And we're seeing what the youngsters are doing. So Jamal Brooks has the right to be in that Barbados squad to help nurture those young men, to help with the leadership. The West Indies a team captain, you just can't dump a man and then say, come and be a reserve. When are you going to pick him? He's 34 years old. Mm. When are you going to pick him? He's going to feel deflated knowing that he cannot get into the original 13. Unless Chairman Brooks has had a word with Brooks and said, well, look, all is not lost. We don't know what discussions have been had. But I do hope that these selectors understand what they're doing and they're selecting squads. Because the guys network, Andrew, look at Dan Bravo, is the network. You cannot do these things to people. And they need to understand that. I would not have picked Dorridge, and I would have gone for a Fowler Clark and give him the opportunity. We cannot allow Joshua De Silva and Imlach to have free reign to West Indies cricket without really producing solid numbers. And I think a guy like Rivaldo Clark can push them. And that is what we need. We need to see people competing for places. And I think that Rivaldo Clark has the skills and the temperament to push for West Indies higher honours. And we need to give the young man an opportunity.
Mm, interesting. Doc, would you have picked Shane Dorridge?
Okay, you.
Would you have picked Shane Dorridge, Doc?
Well, I would first say that it's a bit contradictory to be worried about Shane Dorridge's contribution at 32 and future West Indies cricket and be so strident with Shamar Brooks's ability to contribute and to mentor. I believe both men equally have that ability.
Did you hear that, Philo?
Also, I think you have to hold on a bit, Philo,
because I'm very keen to hear your response. This is getting muscular. Yeah. It's getting hot in here.
Yes. Well, there wouldn't be a response because the inequality of the argument already takes care of the matter. But
oh my golly!
What I would say is that we are. Now you're making me laugh so much.
take your time. Yes, take your time.
But you know the thing is we aren't privy to what the selectors may have discussed with Shane. I'm not sure why he retired from international cricket. But the fact that they picked him after such a move would say that they've had discussions and they have a plan. Of course we'd need someone from that group to articulate it. But, I mean, as it stands, I'm not sure that there's a quality where you keep a batsman in, even though there's some youngsters that Philo mentioned. So I don't really have a problem with Shane at 32 being there. And, you know, people have retired and are retired. And we have heard of certain matters which may suggest why such a move was made in any case, which I heard on the airwaves today. So something is going on that we may not be totally privy to, but you can't say that an older guy who is even older and is producing less at the level at this stage can offer more than a younger guy who's recently produced and was offered a place and turned it down. I mean, we still have to build cricketers. So either we have neither Brooks or Mr. Dorridge, or we can have, you know, one or the other. So That's just my point.
Okay, just before Philo responds, so you don't have a problem with Dorridge in the side, Doc, and you don't have a problem. So what's your position on Brooks? He's a reserve.
Well, I think that, unfortunately, you know, I respect everyone that's played in national cricket, everyone who's played cricket for Barbados. I would say that based on Brooks's age, his performance recently, I would find it unlikely that we may see Brooks in a representative West Indian side again. And I believe that, you know, maybe the selectors are keeping that in mind when they try to unearth what next is there. I believe that they may believe that he's come to the end of the road. We never know. I mean, people play cricket until 40, and I know there are lots of people who perform, into an advanced age, but time will tell.
Okay, now I know that Tony, you want to make a comment, please, and Philo, but I just want to make a point. When I look at the construct of the Barbados side, I agree with you, Philo, that Rivaldo Clark should be in the side. We're not picturing Shane Dorridge. But when you look at the six Pacers, is it necessary? in the 13-man squad to have Akeem Jordan, Zaire McAllister, Shamar Holder, Shaquille Cumberbatch, Roshan Primus, and Raymond Reefer, all can bowl pace. I'm not sure that you need to have six in the 13-man squad. And this is why I think that we could have played under the batsman. I agree with you, fellow, on that. So let me get your reaction, and then Tony Gray, I'm sure, has got a comment as well.
Andrew, selections, picking squad is about balance. Selector is going for Shane Dowridge on what merit. He captained the side last year, I think. But Dowridge has retired from international cricket, which means he doesn't have any interest playing for West Indies. I just saw something came through on my phone, and he sold West Indies for $172,000. US.
Mm. Say that again, fellow.
All these are factors that are going to be ahead.
I've got to follow that story.
I just saw
story,
something
then.
Come through on my phone that Dowridge sold West Indies for $172,000.
Oh, my goodness. US.
I alluded to that in my discourse.
But so the thing is that you don't want to be caught up in these kind of legal matters. I'm still playing cricket for Barbados, knowing that Cricket West Indies have to write the check. So sometimes you have to protect players, Andrew. Selectors are supposed to protect the player. It's not about being friends with anybody. If you're looking at value for cricketer in Barbados, Shamar Brooks is value. Okay. And I think he was badly managed and handled at Cricket West Indies level. And these are the things that need to be addressed. It's not about friendship. It's about dealing with people, dealing as a cricketer, not as a friend.
I think
that man deserves better treatment. He deserves better treatment in Barbados cricket. He's not playing for West Indies, but surely in Barbados cricket, he deserves better treatment. And we need to understand that we need to treat our cricketers better and just not dump them and leave them on the wayside to suffer. And people will pass them and say, Kadir, that is not what we are about. We're about making our cricketers feel happy and wanted. And when people see them, they acknowledge them. And we are going to just throw a man on the bus because he's 34 and he's not picking. You can pick six fast bowlers for Barbados, go to Jamaica. And then at Sabina Park, we'd have a play cricket a long time. You don't know how the pitch can play. How are you picking your side, dog? You got Rivaldo Clark, a young man who's done wonderfully well in the elite division, who deserve a Barbados playing the 50 over. You took Craig Duffy as an opener. Come on, Dr. Ford. Be real and be honest. About
sure
how
we
you select
always...
sides and how cricketers are supposed to be valued. Mm-hmm. We have to value all cricketers. A cricketer is not a fellow you just see on the road. A cricketer is a fellow that brings people into this country and is recognized. And he should be valued. He's like
a former
sportsman.
Cricketer, I appreciate your passion.
I'm a former cricketer, but I'm also a human being, Dr. Ford.
Yes,
we just can't value people's contributions to sports in this country.
We
just can't dump a man because of that. Because he didn't go to a certain school, he deserved to get dropped. That is madness. Give the man the jewels that is to him and let him go and enjoy himself and perform in Barbados. He's more asset to Barbados than anything else now. We need him. We don't have a middle order. We don't have a middle order in our cricket, and you drop a man at 34 and then you make him a reserve and pay $1,500. Leffy's begging. Come on.
Okay. Right. So I mean, Philo, I mean, in this sort of form, I think it's speculative to suggest that friendship or which school someone goes to is used as a means of making decisions. I mean, even if that were the case, I think we have to consider more. Weighty things to talk about. But, you know, the thing is that I don't think any cricketer is to be disregarded. I think every cricketer is respected. Every cricketer is important. Every cricketer does something once they represent their country and the West Indies. And I don't think we can sit here on a cricket show and suggest that cricketers should be disrespected. You know, in the absence of the selectors or someone to speak on their behalf, I think that we're all entitled to some opinion once we can bring some measure of logic to the discourse. So, you know, but I understand your argument and I understand your passion, and I really hope that you know, Mr. Brooks will find his way back. Who knows, someone will be injured. Who knows, there are three games and then other games. So I think it's premature to have an epitaph and to have an announcement in the nation on Sunday regarding his cricketing career. But I don't think we should equally suggest that another player that's given an opportunity is given an unfair advantage because of something, some connection or the other. We would have to hear from the people that make the decisions, but I know I do understand your opinion, just as I'm sure you understand mine. I think Andrew is on the phone, but he does have a point. I think Andrew is thinking.
Well, in fact, Doc, I was just trying to get Philip Nichols, who's a lawyer for Shane Durridge, you see. So that's what I was talking about. But I know Tony Gray wants to come in. Tony, please come in.
Well, the thing about it is that being a selector, you have to be strategic. I remember Darren Sammy recently talked about how the Australians, remove their senior players in a humane way and strategically bring in the young players. I mean, when you look at, I was on the West Indies team as a youngster, and you had all these experienced players to lend assistance to the quality, the discipline that you need to show and that sort of thing to pass on that to the younger players. So I think that both gentlemen have points. I mean, you want somebody there who has the qualities. Like, for example, when I was a Red Force chairman of selectors, what I did is leave Imran Khan on a team. I gave him a contract because of the fact that he had all the qualities that were necessary to pass on to the youngsters, to have them disciplined. He used to train after the game actually finished. So those are the qualities that you want. And, you know, it's not really about age, but it's what you can bring to the team. Mm. If you're strategically developing young players, then you want a senior player around them to not just add that inner quality, that drive, that discipline, but also you want that senior players to be able to perform well as an example, and you have him, why not use him? You look at the Australian side, they've not brought anybody into that side, you know. They have played their strongest team, although Warner has retired. They're batting Steve Smith at an opening position, so they've made it difficult for players to come onto the Australian side, and you have to work exceptionally hard. That's what used to happen with us. So it is about working hard, and it's about getting equality from the youngsters. So both gentlemen have very good points, but again, Philip Wallace, very emotional there, and you have a right to be because you were a former West Indies player, and you know what it is to be left out of a side and not communicated with, things like that. So you have to understand that you're dealing with human beings first of all, and you're dealing strategically as a selector. You have to be strategic in the way you move players who are senior players, and you invite younger players to take the mantle.
All right. Let's take a couple of calls. Time is flying. Can we take a couple of calls and we go to a commercial break? Hello, welcome, Mason and guest.
Yes, good night, Mr. Mason.
Hey, how are you doing, sir?
Not bad. And to your guest. Now, Mr. Wallace, I hope he's following West Indies cricket, where the selectors is concerned, and Barbados cricket, where the selectors is concerned. Because most of the selectors that we have at present used to criticize the selectors before they took up that position. Now tell me, I call these selectors' name, because I know them. I mean Belgian selectors.
Mm.
How can anybody that know cricket drop Works in a team that have players short? You're building a team. How can anyone that know cricket call? So some is something besides cricket.
Mm.
There's no way you can name a Barbados team now with what Works. Mm.
And
how far?
It's also an insult too, in my view, to have him as a reserve. You know, it's like it's like taking a Malcolm Marshall on a tour and putting him on the bench. What was that all about? Come on.
How far is Works from the West Indies team? Works is not too far from playing for the West Indies again.
Well, I'm not sure he may necessarily play again for the West Indies, but I don't think it's right to have him as a reserve. No, that's not right.
And not only that, That's why I'm talking to Wallace, because all of them just talk till they get the opportunity to perform. Because you can look at the selectors that we have right now. Some of them were big critics of selectors before. And now they have the job to select a team. They're doing it. They're like, no, tell me, you have a man who said, I finished with international cricket. Now, how you could pick him in a team that is to get there to put people in the West Indies team? You got to go and play someone that might shine and make the West Indies team. You could play a man that tell you play and he finished. I'm playing him. No, well, tell me what kind of thinking that is. What really going on? No, I would like to know. Being a cricket lover, I just don't understand it. Why you? You know, I like Dulwich, but why play Dulwich? You could help me.
No, we've expressed our concerns about it. I want to thank you for your contribution, because we got a couple of calls, and we also have as well to go to commercial break. Let's take a, can we take another call? Yes, we can. Hello, welcome. Hello, welcome. Good night.
Hello, good night. Yes, sir. Listen, I would agree that if you're not going to pick Brooks, don't put him as a reserve.
Right.
But I would not be jumping up because he's not playing. Brooks is averaging under 30 in 99 matches for Barbados. So they're not arguing that. I would say if you're not going to pick him, don't make him a reserve.
I agree.
But if you drop him,
you don't have a problem.
Over that.
You don't have a problem with that.
He's under 30 in 99 matches. For West Indies, he has 13 matches, and he's averaging about 23, 24. So it is nothing to jump up and haul about.
I see. All right.
We are talking about this team going to get beat and things. We have beat Austria for 26 years. And they had star players. You understand what I'm saying?
I'm with you.
Yes, Louis here, little trade the best, and we may produce somebody because they may go with heart. If you understand what I mean, they may want to do well. But otherwise, I'm not critical at all of the selectors. I'm saying, don't pick him, don't make him a reserve. But there's nothing to write home about. He's averaging under 30. Nobody should be arguing about a man like that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your contribution. Can we stick another call in? Can we, Ken? The man in red. Hello, welcome. Missing and guess. Hello, welcome. All right. So just to come back to this cricket, there's two without loss. First over being bowled by Hazelwood. Chanderpaul is in two. And Brathwaite hasn't scored this. He's faced six balls. So we're going to continue to update you until 8 o'clock. What we're going to do, we're going to take a commercial break and come back, of course, and take your calls as well. Mason and Guest brought to an association with our very good friends at ASFE Workroom, the best shop of the day.
ASFE, like rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da, pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right. Just trying to talk to Philip Nichols, who's actually Dorothy's lawyer. But he says he's not in a position to come on the show maybe sometime next week. This development, I mean, it's all over social media. You heard it on the news as well.
Well, I was informed by, while I was driving, I was told by a friend that it was on the news, and I heard about it. This is why I alluded to cryptically that, you know, there may be more involved in the retirement than we may understand. But of course, this is all speculative. But, you know, I know a lot of things happen in West Indies cricket. We're on the outside. We don't know what's going on. And the same thing happens in Barbados cricket. It's because, you know, an executive or a body does things, and the onlookers are always puzzled. But I would hope that some sort of thought and logic, as I say, would have gone into the decision and talking to the players and discussing it with them. I'm sure that, or I would hope that both Mr. Brooks and Mr. Dowridge, this matter that concerns Phil, I hope that they would have been spoken to and they would have been told what's happening and would understand where they stand. So, you know, we could sit here and talk about it for another 20 minutes, but we won't get any further. So what's next?
Now, let me come back to you, Tony. You looked into your crystal ball. Do you think the West Indies, Tony Gray, will fight in this test series? Tell me.
Yeah, I think that obviously one of the great things about being a huge underdog is that you don't have the pressure of expectancy. So it can be used. I think that when you have a staff in this sort of situation, they have to do extra work to booster your team psychologically. That's the important factor. But we have some players who can perform well under pressure, but they have to understand that they're playing against human beings and negate the fact that these guys, the Australians, are the number one team in the world. So the coach can use, the management can use the fact that the level of expectancy is not there. They're not expected to do well. They're not expected to win this game as a motivation for them to go out there and perform well. But it takes that type of character. It takes the fact that they have to be combative, because Chandler Paul, for example, Tejan Ryan, was combative last year when he went across there. And it showed that once you go after the Australians in an intelligent way, you can put them off because they expected to get early wickets. We're batting right now. And if we can work the ball around, frustrate them a bit, they will try harder and harder. And there's where bad deliveries come. So it's really about what is happening internally more than what is happening externally that creates the mindset and the environment that you want to go after the Australians. And going after the Australians, I mean, you're working around the ball, trying to play in your comfort zone and not allowing the Australians to play in theirs.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a great importance. Are you saying something, Doc?
Well, no, I just saw Chandler Paul try to leave a ball alone. It went past third slip. He didn't have much
Say it again. Say it again, Doc.
I just saw Stark Bull to Chandler Paul. He left the ball alone, but he was a bit slow and it took the edge and went between third slip and gully. And everyone was kind of, jumping there. That was a fortunate one there. I think it was beating for pace there with that one.
Well, I did mention in the early parts of the program that Chandler Paul seems to overcompensate with his technical the back foot movement. When you look at him in slow motion, and I saw him in the nets in Australia, he's moving with extreme movement. So he's a candidate for that LBW because he leaves that the left hand front leg in front of the stumps. So he's got to be able to move to synchronize with the bowler's release rather than move too early or move too deep into the crease, because in addition to the back foot movement, he has additional movement and that's not good for batting at all.
Yeah, but well, his stance is even more open than I remember it to be, and he's crouching even more. So it'll be interesting to see if he can move quickly enough to get into line with the ball. Rathwit left a few alone and he's been very decisive with his leave alone and has quickened up his wrist action to make sure the bat is there. So at least we aren't doing too badly. It's 9 without loss.
You hear from there.
3.1 over, it's not bad.
Lawrence,
How's the game all start, Doc?
I like that. We got two very, very interesting gentlemen on the line now. Yago Ro, Lawrence Ro, how are you, sir?
Hey, not too bad. I know you're doing.
Okay, good. Right. Well, we spoke to you last week and, we said we were going to speak to you again. And we also got the noted journalist, Mike King. First of all, Yago, if you can call you that, do you think the West Indies can compete against Australia?
Well, you know, it's cricket. I don't think in this this format we are strong enough to do it. But I wouldn't, you know, it's cricket. I don't count people out when it comes to cricket. You know, if the guys work hard and they can apply themselves, you know, anything can happen. But we would want to tend to believe. We tend to believe that, you know, if they apply themselves and work hard enough at their game, you know, anything could happen.
Right. Okay. Now let's go to Mike King, now noted journalist. Michael, the West Indies up against Australia. Do you expect the West Indies to beat Australia, Michael?
Well, let me first start saying too by a happy new year to the countless listeners out there, and of course to their respective families. In relation to Australia, well, you know, I have a reputation for being brutally honest. We won't do well. We will be badly beaten. I don't think so.
Badly beaten?
Well, it's the weakest team to ever toward Australia. We've got to be honest with ourselves. It's not a strong team. Even if we had the GSM holders and the Kyle Mayers, it wouldn't be much different. We really are not good enough to compete with Australia in Australia.
I see. Well, of course, Lawrence, you can go back to the days when you would have played for the West Indies in Australia, that famous 1975 tour. What a tour it was, Lawrence.
Yes, that was a tough tour. We were all youngsters at the time. I think on that tour, it was only two players on that side that had, only two people on that side had gone to Australia before. So although we were extremely talented, we didn't have the experience on the bouncy, quick track at that time. You know, and then apart from that, we believe that we run into some umpiring that was awful. And one of the other things that I thought at our downfall was that Van Bernholder and Pete Boyce had broken down. And we had a young Holding who was making his way. So the senior man we had there was Andy Roberts. And he stood up, and then young Holding came on. But we didn't have the backup firepower that the Australians had at the time. And I think that was the difference in the series.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Michael, you remember that series pretty well, don't you?
Well, yes, I was a very young man at the stage. I think it was probably 14 years old listening to it as a schoolboy. Tremendous cricket. It was a baptism of fire. Tough series for the West Indies. We went 5-1. My good friend Lawrence George Roar, I think, got a tremendous 100. I think it was at the Cabo. Tough series. Dennis Keith Lilly had just returned to international cricket, formed a little combination with Jeffrey Robert Thompson, backed up by Gary Gilmore, Max Walker. Tremendous series for Australia.
Yeah, tremendous. Wasn't it? And it was pretty tough in terms of the pace, Lawrence.
Yes, and the wickets were much quicker then than I've seen it over the years. I mean, it was unbelievable how those wickets were. Even at Sydney now, that started to be a turner. I mean, that thing, the normal bounce was by my chest at that time.
So,
it's funny, and it had grass on it. So, you know, it was tremendous pace. But as I said, the difference in the series, and if you look, every first innings we competed against them. It was the second innings that we faltered. And again, because of, you know, a lot of the bad decisions we were getting, we were demoralized a bit with that. And then we didn't have the backup firepower where Van Buren and Keith Boyce had gone down. So our firepower was lesser. When Mikey and Andy had finished up, we didn't have the backup firepower to come along. Gilmore was no slouch with pace and swing. You know, and you had Max Walker was swinging his thumb out, and then Lillian Thompson was the king of pace, you know, especially Thompson, you're extremely quick, you know. So that was the difference in the series, in my opinion, at the time.
Tell me something, Lawrence, would Thompson be the fastest bowler you ever faced in your life?
I think on a consistent basis, he was very, very slippery off the track. You know, I didn't even try to hook at him because he was so deceptive. I tried to evade it, get out of the line of the ball and try to evade it. So I never hooked at him. That's how I felt. You know, when I tried to hook at Dennis and think a little bit more,
Yes, but not Tamo. He slip it onto you so quickly that, you know, if you wasn't in the right position, it put the curtain for you, because you have to remember, back in those days, you're not only bat to make runs, but you had to bat to protect yourself as well.
Yes, yes, those guys were sharp.
There was no helmet, there was no arm guard, there was nothing of that sort. And to take on that kind of pace here, your footwork had to be good. You had to be in good position all the time.
Yeah.
These guys.
Indeed.
You know? Yeah, it was no easy stuff.
Yeah, fellow.
I would like to ask Lawrence a question.
Sure.
Lawrence, what was your mindset as a batter in Australia? And how did you set up mentally to face the Australian bowlers?
Well, that is also something that, you know, over the years, and when we got there, I had gone through my baptism. I had gone through the great test matches that I played early on, and I'd gotten runs in those. And my great series against England, where I got the 300 and 2 single centuries. So by the time I got there to Australia in 75-6, I had gone through my eye problems. I was having some trouble. So I was coming back in that series. I was the best batsman in the world probably a year or two before that, and now I was making a comeback after the eye problem. So that was some difficulty for me. But it is a whole situation of, you know, you have to believe in yourself. You have to have that belief and know clearly what you're going to do when you go out of wicket. My technique was pretty much simple, I think. I don't like the complicated stuff here all over the place. It's simple, simple stuff. And when you be that simple, you pick the line and length of the ball as quickly as you can. And that is really batting for me. When you can do that quickly, that is the hallmark of good batsmanship. And you'll be able to leave well, you know, get out of the line of the ball well. And you have to be able, as I said earlier, and I'd have a hook at Thompson, because I picked up earlier a clap that it would be difficult with two men back.
Right.
To take him on hooking. I believe you're going to commit suicide at some stage if you do that. So I was able to pick that up earlier, clap, that I didn't want to do that, and to try to evade it and look at other shots that I could play off it. You know, I could square cut that was in front of me, so I could square cut that. I could manage that. I could look at the bounce in front of me than trying to get inside of it to try to hook.
Mm.
You know, so that was the mindset is what it is, and you have to select as a player where your strengths are and where your weaknesses, and you have to be able to detect that and work on your strength. Work with your strength, you know, and I think that's what I did.
Yeah, that's...
As I said, the technique was fairly simple. It wasn't anything complicated, and I stay with it. Sometimes your technique is going to fail you, and a lot of players, if your technique fails a little bit and you get into some bad habits, they want to change their technique and change this and change that, which complicate the whole issue. Cricket is a tough sport, and it's tough. You're going to have some failures. Is how you come back from it. And you have to stay with what got you there in the first place. And if you work hard enough and stay with it, you will come back.
Very interesting. In terms of you, of course, Mike King, we haven't won a test match for 26 years. I mean, so you don't think that we'll compete at all?
Well, it's going to be difficult, really, to compete with Australia. I mean, Australia, one of the top two teams in the world, probably the world test champions. It's a strong side, and they've always been a very good side, especially at home. But Australia is a top team. The West Indies is very much on decline, and we don't have that kind of quality in our team to really say that we are going to challenge them. And a lot of new players, you hear names like Hodgson, Justin Graves, and these people are new to Australian conditions.
Right.
The same way that Lawrence and Alvin were new in 75, 76. And of course, right. Lawrence and Alvin of a way higher caliber than these young guys, so you know what's going to happen. I don't think you've got to be a student of Yale or Princeton to know that we'll be badly beaten to love. We just got to hope that one or
two people step up. We get one or two outstanding individual performances. Young Shander Paul gets his way to a 70 or 80. Somebody picks up a 5-wicket haul. We've got to hope for that kind of thing, but in terms of team performance, Australia will win. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I see. Lawrence, just before you go, we certainly want to look at the big celebration for you, that remarkable achievement. And you'll be getting closer and closer because I think we've got on Saturday morning clinic, cricket clinic. Can you tell us about that and what's happening on Sunday and throughout the week?
Yes, on the Saturday morning we have a cricket clinic for the youngsters here in Broward County. You know, we want to give back some.
Yes, Lawrence. He's gone? Oh my God! Can we just try to get him back quickly before I know that?
Yes,
Lawrence is gone. We missed him. I know we got another 2 or 3 minutes left in the show. Michael, any fond memories of Lawrence Yagoro?
Well, a top player, a good player, especially. Well, I forgot to say that, of course, in conditions really ideal for batting. The thing with all against Lawrence is when it got a little tough. When it got a little tough, sometimes it challenged him. But very, very sweet on the eye in terms of pure aesthetics. You can't fault Roe. But you know, when the big argument came as a schoolboy in the 1970s, who was the better player out of Roe and Kelly Duran, I went with Kelly Duran. Kelly Duran had a little more fire in his guts, and Kelly Duran was a better all-round player. But if you're talking pure artistry, pure aesthetics, you'll go with Lawrence George Roe, but Kelly Duran was a better all-round player and got runs all over the world, really.
I see. Philo, what's the latest score there, Doc? Can you tell me? The last time you said it was 9 without loss. Can you tell me what's it now? Is it 52 without loss, Doc?
14.
Well, it's still without loss. It's now 14 without loss. So, Bracken is 8 and Shander Paul is 6. And it's 6.1 overs.
And nothing strange happened to the Chandra Paul in terms of leaving the ball?
No, they're quietly going about their business, leaving the ball a lot and just nudging it around, trying to see the shine off.
Mm-hmm. Any advice, Doc, for Chandra Paul?
So I think Mike would be a bit buoyed by this start.
Mike, are you buoyed by the start?
40 without loss. Well, I hope it turns to 140 without loss. I mean, you know, I'm resting. We all are resting and saying we want the best to happen. But the team simply, wishing is not going to do it for us. The team simply is not strong enough, really. And the Australians are a very strong side, potent pace attack. I would like to really tell listeners really that the West Indies are going to take one of the matches into fifth there. But you know, I can't lie on public radio. I don't think any of the matches will go into 5 days. We've got to fight hard. The team is just not strong. It's unfortunate we didn't quite get it right with the Darren Barber situation. He should have been selected for the one-day series here in the Caribbean. Right. And then we probably should have taken him to Australia. At least we would have had someone with experience in Australia. And we would have had someone with experience up there. But it's a young, unproven side. And, of course, we just got to hope. But I think that really and truly that it will be very, very tough.
All right. Thanks to you. Time is up, Michael. Of course, 14 without loss. You can see it on Sportsmax. You can see it on Flow Sports and Willow. And we will certainly be in a position next week to come back and maybe say that the West Indies have done well in this test match. Thanks to you, Doc. I know you're going to be up all night watching cricket. And, of course, the Australian Open, Coco Gauff. I know that's Phil Wallace's favorite player. Thanks to Anthony Gray, who likes Andy Murray. And, of course, I'm a Djokovic man. I'm Andrew Mason. It's open for a bar tomorrow. It's good night.